In the offertory, I did give reference to an alarm of war. In fact, we basically centered on that with the ram's horn. But we know that war is coming. There is no doubt about that. People in the know, science or military men, definitely know. I think I told you the story some time ago of being at Lowe's Hardware, and I was looking for a part. And in the same row, there was another guy who was looking for a part. And of course, you can't find the part you want, especially men, because it's right in front of you, and you're not going to look there, so it takes a lot longer. But anyway, the war in Ukraine, military operation in Ukraine, had just started. And at that time, people were talking about it, and he and I started talking about it while we were looking for our parts. And he said that, and of course, Colorado Springs, you know, the academy, and a lot of people, generals down there, and all many military men, a lot of retirees. But he said, I have a neighbor who bought a house 1 year ago, and he said he just sold it. He's a general, a retired general, and he is going to be moving to Europe, to Germany, and his whole family is going to be moving to Germany. And he said, I asked the guy, well, why are you moving to Germany? He said, you know, the Germans. He said, it's going to happen again. And this is like 3, 4, 5 months ago. And it sends shivers up and down your spine when you hear that. And you wonder, what does the German general know? Well, the military knows a lot more than we do. And there are secrets that we will never find out. There's military equipment that we know nothing about, whether it be in the United States or over in Europe. We realize there are weapons of mass destruction, excuse me, that have been, since 1945, better and better able to destroy mankind. Weapons that take us out very quickly, and they're weapons of all types, of course. But we know that what's coming is going to be so devastating, brethren, and this is must be brought up on the Feast of Trumpets, that unless God does intervene, there will be no flesh alive. And when we say flesh, it's just not human beings' flesh, but no flesh. The devastation would be so great that there would be literally no flesh saved alive. Now, basically, it's talking about human beings, but there would be no flesh saved alive. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 21, we find when Jesus Christ was answering the question of his disciples on, tell us about the end time. What's going to happen in the end time? Now, they thought end time would have been 5 years away, 10 years away. Probably they thought even closer, because at that time, they would have thought that Christ maybe wasn't even going to die, since they really didn't fully believe that he would be crucified. No, Peter said, it's not going to happen to you. Remember that? It's not going to happen to you. So they had this idea that Christ would come. He enters Jerusalem on a donkey, and he has a tremendous celebration. You know, people were crying aloud and praising him, and the priests, the religion that was at that time, Sadducees, Pharisees, and all, were very jealous. We remember that because the people in Jerusalem were looking for a conquering king. They were under the Romans, and they wanted to be saved from that captivity and the Roman Empire that was existing at that time. Very much the Roman Empire, by the way. So we see in Matthew 24 then, Matthew chapter 24 and verse 21 and 22. We know these scriptures, but let's focus in on them here quickly. And when a minister says quickly, that doesn't mean that the sermon's almost over. Matthew 24, verse 21 and 22. For then there will be great tribulation. Okay, so he talks about the first four seals. You know, he's talking about false prophets. He's talking about famine. He's talking about pestilence. He does, but he's coming now to the fifth seal, And he says there's going to be great tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no ever shall be. Now, if you're familiar with a site called Quora, or I don't know if it's pronounced that way, but Q-U-O-R-A, Quora. And I don't know how that started coming in on my computer, except maybe once it showed up and I opened it up. And so from then on out, it's like, oh, we got you. We'll send it to you all the time. But it has very interesting statistics and a lot about World War I and World War II and the atrocities that have taken place with the Japanese, the Germans, and it goes all the way back in history. What are some of the most devastating battles ever? So you see this type. How many of you have seen this Quora thing? It is very interesting. So along with football and Quora, you know, you can go in and see a lot of interesting stuff. But what you read, though, with the war and what's happened in the past, the battles, what took place, for example, even before the atomic bomb was blasting out Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you remember that, the devastation there. There was an incendiary bomb. There was 400, actually, incendiary bombs that landed on one of the cities that wiped out 99% of the population. Sometimes we don't even hear about that. 99% of the population of a city. I think it was greater destruction than the nuclear weapons. But you read about things like that, and then you read here, it says, there's going to be great tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time. No, never shall be. So it's actually good to read the history of wars. It's good to read the history of the Civil War. I don't think there's any war after the Civil War where we have lost as many in any war than the Civil War. It was just huge, gigantic loss of life. But that's nothing compared to the Great Tribulation. If you count up all the wars that have taken place, you look at the statistics, this is going to be the worst. How many people read Matthew 24? It's in the New Testament. It's not in the Old Testament. So people can't say, well, that's Old Testament. This is New Testament. And people can't say, well, it happened in World War II because it says it's the end time. What is going to happen at the end time? Brethren, this is still going to transpire, take place. Since the beginning of the world until this time, no, and after that, ever shall be. Even when Satan is loosed at the end of time, it's not going to be as big as what happens at the end of the 6,000-year period, basically is what I see. Unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Notice that. Because God is going to save his people, the elect, the first fruits, and all of those who come after, actually, because what do you do if everybody is destroyed? You don't have a population. You don't have the birth of children. So what you have then is the end of mankind, the end of God's plan. And what do you have for the elect's sake? You have to have for the elect's sake. That's for the church. That's for God's people. You have to have for the first fruits, those days shortened. Now, is time shortened? Because some people say, well, it's 6,000 years, but time will be shortened, so it's 5,985 years. I don't believe it, it doesn't say that. It says that this period of time, and it's within the time frame that God has, and I personally believe there's 6,000 years myself, and I personally believe that from the very start of creation to the time Christ returns, it's going to be 6,000 years. Now, that's my thoughts. And if Christ comes 5 years before, 10 years after, I willingly will not correct God. And I don't think any of you either will. So whatever is to be, but I think God has a plan. He holds things up so we don't destroy ourselves too early, because we could have. You know, Germany had a bomb in the making, the atomic bomb in the making. Japan had an atomic bomb in the making. They did. But God didn't allow it. I think with the Germans, it was in a plant, an industrial section, and a bomb went through a smokestack down into the basement area where they were would have been protected and blew everything up. That's what I read. Japanese, the same type of thing happened, but God held things up. He wasn't going to allow an atomic bomb to be in the hands of the fascists or in the Nazis or the Japanese. He wasn't going to allow that. Americans would take it easy. We wouldn't just take a bomb and then take over the world. We would not do that. It wasn't in the nature that God gave to the Israelites. So we have then articles that are out, and I'll just cover a little bit of this, but I looked up, and if you go to the correspondence course that was written in 1964-65, it talked about 1955 being the year that mankind, or the scientists and the military men, said, now we have enough firepower to destroy the entire world, 1955. So we have in Matthew, let's go to Matthew 24:34 in a moment. You can turn there and I'll read you a couple items from a couple different articles that talk about the times in which we are living. So we'll come back to verse 34 in a minute, but there are 12 things that in this article by Matthew Dillon at Vox.com. So if you want to write that down, it's Matthew Dillon at Vox.com. And the title of the article is The 12 Things Most Likely to Destroy the World. And it gives an introduction, of course. Back then, in 1955, there was more than one means to destroy the world. They talked about, poisonous gas that you could perpetuate over the entire earth and poison everybody, I suppose. I don't know if they had enough at that time, 1955, but at least they were talking about the possibility in 55, because there was enough Soviet nuclear power and American nuclear power to destroy the whole world. So what this guy says, and he mentions 12, I'm not going to mention all of them, but it's catastrophic climate change of 3.5 degree warming that he said would destroy the earth. If you have a nuclear war, by the way, you get, I think, minus 58 degrees. It's going to solve global warming, I guess you could say, if there's nuclear war, because it's going to be 58 degrees less with all of the nuclear waste and the soot, in the air. But he talks about that. Then he talks about nuclear war. And he says, the good news here is that nuclear war could only end humanity under special circumstances. Limited exchanges like the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki would be humanitarian catastrophes, but couldn't render humans extinct. Now, when I read that, I realized that there's a time of Jacob's trouble. You would have nuclear war, possibly during that period of time, a conventional nuclear war, I guess you could call it. And you'd only have millions destroyed. And there wouldn't be so much. He even talked about India and Pakistan. It would be devastating, but it would not end the world. An attack from Russia to the United States would not end mankind. There would be millions and millions destroyed, but it wouldn't be bad enough where the end of the world would come. And I'll go to that article here in a few minutes. The next one was global pandemic. And he talked about 1918, Spanish flu. I call it the swine flu, because if you read the books, you'll see basically you can blame it on the pig. Black Death, before that, they killed millions. So we know that there can be pandemic. We realize there's COVID-19, started in 2019, and we still have that appearing. I don't know if we could call it COVID-23, COVID-22. It's a SARS flu, brethren. This is flu season, and people are going to get flu, so be careful. But still, you have another pandemic coming. We know that there's going to be famine and then disease. I'll come back to that with nuclear. I didn't mention everything. He talked about supervolcano. Don't go to Montana if you think you can escape all of this. That's one of the worst places to go. Yellowstone National Park, we know that, I mentioned I think the other day, but they call it Yellowstone Super Eruption in this article. So you don't want to go there. Colorado's too close. And by the way, in the next article, the son asks the father who goes into this scientific research, where is the best place to go? We have a person here from that area that probably won't be moving back there, but that's the place to go. I'll bring it up in a minute. Synthetic biology, won't spend time on that. Artificial intelligence, that's another one that they put down. Concerned with the possibility of exponential advances in artificial intelligence. In other words, making robots, artificial intelligence, and then we can't contain them. They take over. You can go to movies and you'll see what happens when they take over. Unknown unknowns. It was interesting here. It says the first 11 items on the list are risks we can identify. He said there's almost certainly other dangers out there with grave potential impacts that we can't predict. So it is very interesting to see this. The one on nuclear war, and I don't want to take all my time on this, but basically what he says would happen would be in a major nuclear war, 5 billion people are going to die of what? Starvation. And our children should know this, by the way, too. They should be alert to this because if you can't get the attention of kids any other way, then strike fear in their heart, right? If you don't do this, I spank you. Okay, that'll get their attention. It doesn't get their attention, by the way, by saying, you know, I told you three times already that if you don't do this, you'd get a spanking. And the child is thinking, yeah, you told me three times, I haven't got a spanking yet, I don't fear you anymore. I'm okay. So if you are going to say something, you know, and I wouldn't keep them from dinner, I wouldn't send them to their room normally. They have their cell phone, they have TVs in their room, so it's actually a blessing to go to their room all alone these days. But whatever the case, it's how do you let people know that these things are real? And basically, brethren, if we weren't keeping the Feast of Trumpets, our mind wouldn't be on this. I was thinking last night, what would happen if I just was not keeping the feast? What happened if we stopped hearing sermons on the subject of the Feast of Trumpets? And the answer is, doesn't take long to forget. And we would lose our fear, and there has to be a proper fear. And not that that should be the motive for obeying God. It shouldn't be. The motive should be a love for God and his people. That's the motive we should have. But God does tell us these things to get our attention. And there's something physical about not wanting to lose our life. But better yet, there's something about if we do lose our life because of what's coming on, then there's a good reason for it. We are losing our life for God's sake, for a way of life that we live. And so we realize that in some of these things, if we didn't know about the Feast of Trumpets, we wouldn't know that there's going to be before that human beings that give up their life as martyrs. We wouldn't know that. So these things are beneficial to us. But he talks about what comes, and he says basically it's going to be worldwide famine. And when you think about the Bible and what God says is going to happen, even with the first four seals, you've got the famine that comes along. And that's what basically this guy centers on with nuclear war, famine, food shortage. He said there'd be 90% of our food supplies cut off within 3 or 4 years in the entire world. So it's a major happening. You know what happens when you can't buy food? You know what happens when you can't buy toilet tissue. I mean, that's bad enough. But if you can't buy food, you know that 2-3 days in advance, if a hurricane is coming, if people go out and they basically buy the stores out, they do. So food is major. We in the church know that you can fast and you're not going to die. You can miss 2 days of food and you're not going to die. You could actually miss 3 days of food, and for most people, you're not going to die. But when I was growing up at the age of 16 and still at home, and I learned about fasting probably when I was 17, I started to fast, and my mother really didn't know too much about this way of life. And so I said, "Well, I'm not going to be eating three meals today." And she said, "Greg, you get in here and eat. You miss a meal, you're going to die." And that's the way of the world. And I remember that. I could not fast while I was home because my mother probably would have died trying to make me not die, is what would have happened. But that's the way of the world. You miss a meal. And in fact, we ate 7 in the morning, we ate at 12 noon, and we ate at 6. We had breakfast, we had dinner, and then we had supper. That's what it was. We didn't have lunch, we had dinner. And to this day, we eat 3 meals a day. 3 a.m., 5 a.m., 7 a.m., 10 a.m. In America, we can snack all the time, and that's a problem because really, when you have famine, people go wild, they kill for food. And so we're coming to a time, famine and then pestilence. I gave a sermon up north on tribulation, and I went through Lynn Torrance's article that he wrote back in 19, what was it, 61, I think. And he talked about what happens when you have no food. And how when you don't have food, then he named all the diseases that came along when they were starving to death. And so you read the Bible, famine, pestilence, disease. You have these things that happen. And of course, when you read like the book of Joel, for example, you're reading about all of these things that take place that absolutely happen when you have war. Plus you have locusts that are also, I mean, the real locusts. Locusts also are the warplanes that are mentioned. But when you have real locusts, you know that they're going to eat crops totally, completely. Just take them all out. We know that. So he goes on in this article, and basically he says that if there's a bomb, if there's something between Russia and the United States, 360 million would be taken out right away. 360 million. And this is a recent article, 2022, August 16th. And then he talked about the climate and what happens in the air. Of course, we know in the Bible it says the sun will not give its light. We realize that. And then he talks about calorie reduction in the way of no food. He says, not all nations of the world would face the same fate under the scenarios studied. Under the smallest nuclear war situation, researchers found that the Middle East, parts of Central America, and parts of Asia would see some food deprivation to starving, while most of the rest of the world would continue to have a normal food intake. I find it interesting that he says the Middle East. It is like, why is he saying the Middle East? Well, because he knows there is so much conflict over there, and the Middle East has been a powder keg with a fuse on basically a barrel of powder ready to blow up. And he knows that. And then he talked about CBS News conducting a study where when the Russia-Ukraine crisis came, 70% of individuals in the United States worried about nuclear war. But here in the last part, he says nuclear weapons haven't been used since 1945, but currently the U.S. and Russia have more than 1,500 nuclear weapons deployed. You go to the studies, and it talks about 400 nuclear weapons, or far less than that. From what I read, I looked it up to see how many nuclear weapons there are right now, and it's 13,800 throughout the entire world. 13,800. Russia having 6,000. And some people have said that when Putin said, I am going to use nuclear, that there's a way they have to start looking at, firing these missiles off. And they had so many mistakes. This one guy is just speculating. He said, they're so bad in their technology. They've bought so many super yachts over there, and they haven't been spending money on nuclear that they realize if they go to nuclear warfare, that those missiles would blow up in the silos. So they said, we're not going to do that. Now it's speculation. Don't say I heard a sermon and the guy said, dot, dot, dot. But the fellow who wrote this showed a map to his son of what would happen in nuclear warfare, and the son said, hey, on this map, I know where we go. You know where we go? Ask Lynn Marshall. We go to Australia, because even today, how many of you saw On the Beach, was it? And was there a movie even before that? On the Beach goes back to about 2000, but On the Beach is talking about nuclear warfare, and it hasn't hit Australia yet, so the movie is about the cloud coming down, the radioactive activity that will take out Australia finally. Have any of you seen On the Beach? It would be, yeah, one person. It would be a good movie to see, I think, just to realize that it talks about the devastation of the world through nuclear warfare. That's why I think it would just be good, because it would still be Australia unless you have nuclear bombs going down to Australia. So, Dad, let's move to Australia. Don't move to Montana, move to Australia. But he said, and this is Alex Wellerstein, historian and professor at the Stevens Institute of Technology, said it's not in the interest of U.S. enemies to get involved with such actions of nuclear warfare. He said, but it should still be a concern. He said, future problems are brewing. I guarantee it. Well, maybe he read the Bible too. But we can guarantee that war is coming, brethren, and it is surreal. But I mentioned that Matthew 24 and verse 34, assuredly I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. And when we think of 1955, if we really did the math, and then we think generation, you think generation 30 years, but that's not what it's talking about. It means that those people born in 1955 are still going to be around in 65, 75, 85, 95, 2022. The generation hasn't passed that has been born then. That generation has not passed away. It's not talking about, you know, until the next generation comes. It's talking about once there is a time, and we don't know that God has set 1955, so I'm not trying to set a date here, because God knows when that time is. But the situation is that once it is possible from God knowing what can take place in a nuclear war, from that time, whether it's 55 or 65, we don't know, 75, we don't know. But I think of 108, because I do look at people who've lived to be, I don't look at them, I read about them. They have, I've never seen any of them. 108 is not abnormal, brethren. So a generation cannot pass away completely for 108 years. But the point is, it really doesn't matter when it's going to happen. We don't want to be like maybe some of our kids or grandkids or whatever who are not in the church any longer and are checking on with us, is this the time of the end? We don't want to do that. We want to obey God, because that is the best way of life to live. Whether we're living in 1700, 1800, 1850, it is just the best way to live. But at the same time, we do know that God's prophecies are going to come to pass. They absolutely will. Well, we do know in Leviticus chapter, and I could go to Revelation 6, but I think I'll save that to maybe a little later in the sermon. But we do know that there is the seventh trumpet that takes place before that. And by the way, there are seven trumpets. So this day and the meaning of this day is at the beginning of the seventh trumpet. We're not just going there. We're going to the first of the seventh trumpet. I'm not spending a lot of time on it. Maybe Mr. Harvey is going to do that in the afternoon. But we do have six seals and then the seventh seal. So you have the fifth seal, tribulation for 3.5 years. Heavenly signs, a short time that introduce the seventh trumpet. Okay? the seven trumpets, better yet, the seven trumpets after the heavenly signs. And there is a period of 5 months in just one of those trumpets, 5 months in one of those trumpets. So when you get to the time of the start of the first trumpet, let's say, it's not like Christ is coming in 2 days. It is seventh trumpet, and then you have trumpet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But you see then with what's happening here in Leviticus 23 and verse 24. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 24. And this is telling us about trumpets. See, this is a summary of the holy days that are given to us in the Old Testament that apply to, of course, now. We know Paul was keeping the holy days. That's another subject of just proving that in the New Testament we do keep the holy days. But the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. Now, this is not the ram's horn. A memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. In the Hebrew, it is a memorial, triumph or shouting for joy with trumpet. So you have a shouting for joy. And so I'm going to dwell on that in the rest of the sermon, because it is a day that is joyous for us. That's why we keep a feast. We're not fasting on this day, because it's just not a period of solemn time only. It is, we know it's coming, but what we are doing is rejoicing that we have the coming of Jesus Christ. Now, I asked the question, what reasons do we have for rejoicing, since it is a time of blowing of trumpets, a memorial of triumph, rejoicing, really being happy that this is happening. So what reasons do we have for rejoicing? So I have a few things that I marked down here. Number one, I think it's the answer to prayer. Because what do we do almost every day? Our Father in heaven, we praise your name and we spend time doing that. Your kingdom come, and we talk about the coming of Jesus Christ. So this time is, we've been asking God for his kingdom to come forever, it seems. We've been asking God, your kingdom come. I don't know if you've ever heard the little skit. I saw it when my nephew was visiting our house and his father was there. Now, his father was a nominal Christian. He claimed to. In fact, his father was actually a Methodist minister. But the son now, who's a grandson of the man who is the Methodist minister, his father is actually an alcoholic. So the son is trying to do anything to get his dad's attention, and he's going through what would be a prayer to God, okay? And so it's a prayer to God, and then the father is saying this, the son has him saying this, and it's like, Father in heaven, and all of a sudden you have an answer, okay, from above. Yes, what would you like? What can I do for you? So it's making a prayer, saying a prayer, and in this, it's the nephew then, my nephew it would be, the son of this guy, it becomes God. So he's playing the role of God, and his father is playing the role of just praying. And so the son says, God says, yes, John, what can I do for you? And John, I'm just praying. Could you not interrupt me? I'm just answering you. I'm not interrupting you. Aren't you talking to me? Well, yeah, but I don't expect you to answer me, actually. So we come to this, and I don't know how far they took it, but I do remember his father didn't change much, although he did make some amends through his life, and things went fairly well. But whatever the case, Let's say now we are praying, Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. And all of a sudden you get an answer from God saying, coming in 3 days. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't mean right away. So when we say thy kingdom come, what is really in our mind? If God really did answer us and said 3.5 years or whatever his answer would be, would it be, well, wait a minute, could you delay that a little while? I've got a lot to do here. I've got a job. And you know how jobs are, and I want to prove myself to be successful. I've got a lot of money to make. I've always wanted a Jaguar. So in the meantime, could you wait until I get some of these things done? But it really gets a point across, because when we say, what reasons do we have for rejoicing? We've been asking God to bring his kingdom almost every single day. Your kingdom come. Now, we're not really happy with all the circumstances. We don't like everything that's happening, but we do know that there is a tribulation leading up to his return. We do know there's going to be false prophets. The false prophet will come along and will not love the truth at all, will preach against the truth, and those who don't love the truth of God will follow him. We know that in the church. He comes, you know, in the place of God, sits as God in the temple of God. So we know that's coming. We know false prophets. We know the world is not going to get any better. We know that I-25 is going to get worse. We're on it coming up. We're on it coming down. So, and that's so minor, isn't it? So very minor, unless we get an accident. It's not too minor. But taking a look at this then, God looks at our heart and really knows if we really want him to come. Do we really want his return? Because if we do, then these days are a time of rejoicing, a time of sadness initially, but a time of rejoicing. So if we have the scenario as time goes on, let's say, why would we be rejoicing when we hear that first trump? Because there is this period of time, and we could go back to Revelation 6. I won't go there right now, but Revelation 6 leading up to Revelation 7, or Revelation 5 leading up to Revelation 6. And we ask the question now, here we are in a place of safety. We have not gone through the tribulation. We are those that have been saved. We're on those wings of an eagle. And so we've escaped the tribulation. In tribulation, what are we going to be really rejoicing about? The 3.5 years will be a time of what is happening back home. But when we hear in tribulation, we hear there are two witnesses in Jerusalem. Time of rejoicing, isn't it? Leading up to the trumpet, first trumpet. There is the beast. There is the false prophet. We're safe, but we at least know things are happening. We can rejoice a little bit, but you know, I think we're not going to rejoice too much in the tribulation, period. Knowing that other people are going through it, that will not be a time of happiness. But at least we know one thing, and that is there is a tribulation that's been prophesied. It has come to pass, as bad as it is. And we don't know the time of Jacob's trouble. We don't know. Some have said it's going to be about the same time that Jerusalem is surrounded by armies. But the fact is, there is rejoicing coming up. We count the days at that time until Christ comes. We're going to be marking, you know, the old saying, we're in Petra and we're in a cave, and we're going to be marking on the wall, you know, day one, day two, day three. Those of you who are not too old and haven't heard those sermons, but how do we keep track, you know, of all this with everything going on? Well, we mark it in, and we're counting all of these days, you know, up to the time, 3.5 year period. And if we did do that, if we were in a cave, and I don't know that we will be. I've been there in Petra. I chose a cave, and it said, this cave has already been taken. And my wife didn't like it anyway. The furnishings were really bad. But wherever it is, the reason we would count down is because we would really be looking forward to the return of Christ. We really would. When we see the devastation, we will want Christ to come. And so we know there's reports from Jerusalem. We know there's reports about the Israelite nations and what's happened to them. And we do know there's no reports from back home. No reports from back home. And, you know, that'll make us want to become spirit beings. We want Christ to come. Because if there's anything we can do to save our relatives, if there's anything we can do to actually intervene and give comfort to those who've gone through major trials, we'll want to do it right away. So our hearts will be lifted up with anything having to do with Christ is coming. We will be rejoicing, we'll be sad, but it's like there is hope. We know how the game ends. We know exactly what is going to transpire. And if God hadn't given us the book of Revelation, we wouldn't know these things. He didn't need to give it to the early apostles because they had no idea of all the devastation anyway, except in general, Matthew 24. Other than that, they didn't know too much. They had the basics, and they knew it's going to be a time of trouble that's really bad. But when God gave Revelation, and he gave a time frame, and they tied it in with the book of Daniel, then now they can put it together. And for us today, it is something where we are really going to be excited, sad and excited at the same time. But it's the memorial of the blowing of trumpets, rejoicing. It's the first of the seven trumpets. So what if you're in a tribulation and you have been in the church and now you're out of the church? And what if we would go through the tribulation? Just think of that. How would we feel? Well, if we've been in the church, we've kept the Feast of Trumpets, and we know what's going to happen. If we're in tribulation, we will be rejoicing. If we can hear that first trumpet, boy, that is a memorial of rejoicing, because we know the tribulation is going to end. Remember, too, the 144,000 do get a mark somewhere along the line. It says 144,000 coming out of tribulation, and there's a mark, so perhaps there will be some who escape early. I don't know. You could have that where God has mercy on those in tribulation and brings them out. There's a great multitude, but there's a lot of individuals in the world at the end time who will have heard about the coming of Jesus Christ. Most of the world will hate what's coming, absolutely hate it. Because you see at the end time, they just get more bitter as you go through these plagues. But if they're in the church and left and they're 170-pound individual, 250-pound individual, and now they're 75 pounds or 100 pounds, they are looking for the return of Jesus Christ. They really are. They remember. There's a song that we've sung, you know, that... sing us a song while you're in Babylon, remember, and sing us a song. I don't know if that's still in our songbook, but it's about being in captivity and singing about Jerusalem and the time, and maybe about the captives. Or the captors are saying this, sing us a song. And you're supposed to grab your instrument and sing a song at that time. What are you going to be thinking of? Well, when we sing a song in tribulation, it's about the return of Jesus Christ. So with each trumpet, when we go through, and I have just something I'll refer to here as we begin ending up, but when we hear the first trumpet, and we see hail, fire, blood, a third of nature burned up, we're excited. Bring on the second trumpet. Bring on the third trumpet. A third of the fresh water turns bitter. That's the third trumpet. Fourth trumpet, the first woe. When we hear about the beast and the, well, 200 million man army, unless that's just a figure showing us it's a lot of people. But when we hear about the Russians, the Asians being attacked by the beast's army, we're going to say, bring it on. Let's get through this. Bring it on, and we rejoice. If we're in captivity, we rejoice. If we're in tribulation, or better yet, if we're not in captivity and we're hearing these trumpets, and wouldn't it be great to hear all six? We're going to be counting. Number one, number two. And then you know when the fifth one comes along, it's going to last for 5 months. That's what the Bible says. And so you know, let those 5 months go quickly, and we rejoice. And then you have the seven last plagues, and every plague that comes along, and these are the plagues that are going to cause people in Revelation 16. I think I said Revelation 6 earlier on, but in Revelation 16, you know the plagues. Probably you go to your Bible if you have them, and you're memorizing them in tribulation. But you know the foul sores, you know the second plague, the seas become blood, and then you're going through all of these, and you know the sixth plague, then the seventh plague, the earthquake, and now you know after that plague, Christ is going to come. It may be a very quick time overall, but you rejoice. You rejoice. So we have then the Feast of Trumpets, and it is a time of rejoicing. And we look forward to the return of Jesus Christ. And one of the biggest things we look forward to is when there's a proclamation by the angel saying, behold, the kingdom of God is being established. The reigning king who's been in heaven is reigning on the earth right now. And I'll end with 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15. And what we see here is definitely a time of rejoicing, don't we? What we've been looking forward to, I hope, every time we hurt ourselves, every time there's pain in our body, every time there's a disease that comes along, every time that we see something physically happening that is painful, we think of the seventh trump and the return of Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and it's about the resurrection. But at the very end, and I'll come to the end here, it says in verse 51, behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall be changed. When Marion and I are talking about the seventh trump, you know who we talk about? Her mom. Her mom was in the church. And she died in the faith. So what we think of is not just our own bodies. It's like we're going to be with grandparents who were in the church. We're going to be with parents who were in the church. We're going to be with people who will be in the church. We're going to be with a whole class of people who come out of the tribulation, physical people. And we rejoice for them. We know at that time that there is, with the rule of Jesus Christ, a control of the earth. We're not going to have the same problems. And we're going to be spirit bodies. That's a whole sermon in itself, being a spirit body. All of us would like to just change right away. I like to go, when I was young, to Superman movies. And that's the most we had back then, brethren, when I was young. It was, we didn't have seven all together who combined their forces in movies, you know. We didn't have that. All we had was Superman. We didn't even have Superwoman. She came along later. The ladies second, men first. So you have, and it was exciting to see Clark Kent. Anybody remember Clark Kent? Some of you do, yeah. All of you are old. So, but it is exciting and to just be changed in spirit being. Again, that's a sermon in itself, and I won't go on. But there is a time of rejoicing because the end ends so well. And we want it to be for not just us, we want it to be for the whole world, for our families, for our kids, for our relatives, for everybody. We want the kingdom to come. So I hope all of us on this day do rejoice. It is a memorial of blowing of trumpets concerning triumph, the triumph of mankind finally through Jesus Christ coming. And we deeply appreciate that God himself has given us this understanding through the holy days, Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost. We know the plan of God. We know what we must do to be in the kingdom. And we know, based on the reward that we're going to get, Romans 8, we could go there, but it's nothing to go through the trials in this life because of the reward that God offers us, eternal life in the kingdom of God, in being with each other and all of mankind who will accept God's way forever.